Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and with my co-hostess, Misty Hall. And we're here with the Straight Wives Radio Show. And this is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess, Misty, and I discuss the issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm good. Good evening, Bonnie. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. A little bit tired. I had a really theatered out weekend. I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday seeing the show Hair.
Oh, nice.
Which is my favorite show, and I saw it on Broadway a number of times, but this production at Kennedy Center was the best. So if you live in that area, it'll be there for a short time longer. But I'm just a child from the days of Mystic Crystal Revelations, and I love that show. And then today I saw the Jersey Boys here in Philadelphia.
Oh, so nice.
More theater than anyone needs to go to in one weekend, but it certainly was an amusing weekend.
You're in such a convenient location to all that stuff.
Hmm?
You're in such a nice location to hit all that stuff, the best of the best.
Yeah, true. Absolutely. And next weekend, of course, we're going to be in Florida.
Yes, we are.
And if people want to hear our voices, they're going to have to listen to our archive show next week because Misty and I will be tied up in our weekend workshop. And we're really excited about that in Fort Lauderdale. And still, we have room for other women if you would like to come down and join us for a day or for the weekend. You know, we're more than happy to have you join us because this is a healing weekend. We have a lot of great activities planned, self-esteem rebuilding workshops, all kinds of healing workshops, getting to know other straight wives. And, you know, we have some surprise activities in store for the women who are coming. And it's just always so validating when we get together as a group, as part of what I call my new Straight Wives Club, to meet other straight wives who, you know, can also see the pain and feel the pain that you're going through. And don't you think it's wonderful, Misty, when you don't even have to say a word and people know exactly what you're feeling?
Exactly, and that's exactly what took place last year and every time I've ever gathered with a group of straight wives. It always takes place, always.
Mm-hmm.
It's something beyond words can explain, and it's something that transcends beyond words, I do believe. And you just, it's that knowing when you're in the same space as those other women, knowing that you're understood and knowing that they understand you, you understand them, they know what you've gone through. And that in and of itself, when you can see other people, they have stepped through, gone on to the other side of healing and onto that journey of that magnificent life, it's just so hopeful for all women.
Absolutely.
When you step inside that and get to see that.
So, you know, if any of you would like to join us, once again, we're still happy to have you come to join us. There's no cost for this. And Misty and I really, like I say, Misty, can you tell a little bit about some of the workshops you're planning?
Wow. I think, it's going to be so packed. We always, one of the most important things we do is, you know, when we first get there and we gather, we share the story. It's telling the story. It's so therapeutic to tell your story and be among a group of women, and every woman in that group has been there and experienced being a straight wife. So that's very therapeutic, and that takes a good part of the first day, is just telling your story, because, you know, we believe each person's story needs to be heard, validated,
uh-huh,
and just listened to by the others. Then, of course, we always mix a little bit of art activities into the situation or to the weekend, and that's just an expressive art. That will be something where, you know, we'll do like a little brief visualization for relaxation and then just come up with different things for you. And one of the things, which I guess I'll give a little bit of it away tonight, one of the things I came up with was just a brief visualization to come up with, you know, what are some things that will help you heal in the following year? What do you need? And, you know, we'll walk through like a guided visualization, and then you'll come up with your own words of encouragement of what will bring you through to the next year and what you can use, and then make a little bitty, just something really small to signify those words, like a little, last year we did like a little star. It was just a little star that we collaged things on. This year we'll do it a little different. We'll come up with some words that are important to us. And, of course, we'll get to the beach to do a release ceremony, which I think is just, was absolutely amazing and spectacular.
Mm-hmm. That certainly was.
That was one of the most important things we did. We all gathered near the water. We wrote letters the night before, or some wrote them that day. Some were still writing them because they knew to write so much the moment we arrived near the water. And some brought little mementos to put in there. One lady brought some of her wedding jewelry from last year. I thought that was really interesting. She was saying goodbye uh-huh. to that and hello to her new beginnings. And whatever we could stuff into the wine bottles, and we did have to have more than one, so we put the letters in there. And just a ceremony of that release of the old and in with the new. And, you know, we'll do a few more expressive art things mixed in as time permits. And there'll
yes,
be a lot of
well, we have some really good, you know, like I say, workshops planned.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still time to join us. And if you're interested, you can write to me at bomk@aol.com, and I'll be more than happy to hook you into our healing weekend. And Misty and I are both so excited about this, and it'll be wonderful to reunite with some of our old friends and meet some of our new ones. So we're really looking forward to this. Misty, one of the things I wanted to discuss for a while tonight is the issue of communication. When women are starting over and, you know, they're getting involved in relationships again, I think that communication is such an important issue, because a lot of our women do go on to have new relationships, and yet they really don't know how to communicate with men because of the fact that when they've been with their gay husbands for a long period of time, they've never had a normal communication in a relationship. And, you know, I wrote a piece on this many years ago, but I think it's so relevant. So if you don't mind, I'd like to read this and then open it up. And if anybody would like to call into our show tonight, you know, we're more than happy to hear your comments. And I'm going to give you the number so that you can call us and talk about your situations or ask us any questions. The phone number for the call-in number is area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that again. It's area code 646-716-4893. And a little bit later, we're really looking forward to having on one of our favorite guests, Maggie. She said that she would have time to call us tonight. We're going to talk about some of the religious issues surrounding straight gay marriages, because that's really an issue for a lot of women also. So getting back to this article, and like I was thinking about this because this week marks, my boyfriend and I are going on almost 17 years, and actually we celebrate every month our anniversary. And this Friday morning before, you know, I leave for Florida, we'll be celebrating our 16-year and 10-month anniversary. We're counting down to 17 years. And I think about this, and I think it's truly miraculous that I've been able to stay in a relationship with somebody for so long based on my poor track record in the past. But one of the things that I think a lot of our women really have difficulty with when they start a relationship is with communicating with their new person that they're involved with. So I really would like to address this issue, and I'm going to write about what I said going back. This is from 6 years ago, but it says the issue of communication. The most important part of any relationship is communication. This seems to be something that is sorely lacking in straight gay marriages, namely because they are built on lies and deception. Of course, this is not to say that it isn't missing in other kinds of relationships, regardless of sexuality issues, but it is even more so for ours. It's bad enough when we read about straight relationships and the lack of communication because women are from Venus and men are from Mars, as the saying goes. But in our marriages, women are from Venus and the men are from the Twilight Zone. I always say that for the most part, straight wives married to gay men are far above the standards of wifedom. You see, women married to straight men have a fighting chance of pleasing their husbands just based on who they are. But we can never please our husbands because of who we aren't, namely men. But that doesn't stop us from trying harder and harder to put that round peg into the square hole, does it? And it never ceases to amaze me how many of us just can't cry uncle and walk away from a no-win situation. We keep trying while we keep crying to figure out where we are going wrong, long after we suspect or know the truth. Go figure. It also saddens me to talk to women who just can't get it. Even when they are faced with the truth, they keep trying even harder to be the perfect wife, as if perfection will turn around the gene pool. And I can say that it's not always their fault. Often it is the fault of the confused gay husband who just can't let go the straight world, even when he is not confused over what stimulates a sexual organ. Again, go figure. Excuse me from digressing from my original thought of communication. I've recently revisited a painful part of my past. You see, even when the years have passed, as in my case, and the marriage is long over, the scars still remain. In spite of all my expertise in counseling skills and relationship issues, I still have to be my own best student. And though it pains me to have to discuss my weaknesses in a forum read by thousands of people, I'm a great believer in people learning from each other. So I will proceed to talk about this with you. One of my areas of self-improvement that I work on constantly is self-esteem. This is a definite tie to my ability to communicate in a healthy way in my relationship with my soulmate, which will soon reach the 10-and-a-half-year mark. I have found a man who truly loves me more than I could have imagined. And yet, I still have fears that if I ask for some additional emotional support when I need it, I will be rejected. This angers me because it is so typical of behavior by someone who feels she is unworthy, which I do not. So why do I have to keep trying so hard? My years with my gay husband trained me to be an excellent partner for any man. I am fully seasoned as far as working my hardest to make someone love me, like all of you are. And to be honest, I've put everything I have into this present relationship. I work hard to keep it exciting and new after all these years. We are middle-aged, but we feel like we're young and in love. Our relationship is solid. I trust this man with my life. It took years of working at it to get it this way. We have both learned to compromise. He works hard to meet my emotional needs, because to me, that's an important part of a relationship. Well, to get to the point, several months ago, my soulmate didn't meet my expectations concerning something that was important to me. I was hurt and angry. It was something simple that required very little effort, and yet it was very significant to me. He blew it, and he knew it. He knew it instinctively, and also because I did tell him. I honestly think he felt worse than I did, because the last thing he ever wants to do is hurt me. In the following 2 days, he tried his best to make up for it by buying me flowers and cards that said emotional things. And I acted like I forgave him, even though in my heart I was still hurting. So life went on and all was well, or so I thought. But over the days and weeks that followed, something was amok. With me, not him. I didn't worry about it because I am premenopausal and expect to feel highs and lows. But the feelings I had were neither high nor low. There was a slow but gentle decline in my feelings for my soulmate. I went through the motions, but I wasn't feeling them. My soulmate knew something was off, but I kept saying it was everything but what it was. Although I made excuses for why this was happening, I was unable to discover the real reason until weeks later. As I started to see that nothing was improving and it started impacting on our intimacy, I realized that there was a problem that I needed to work on. I did some mental backtracking to the time when my feelings started to shift, and voila, I finally figured it out. It all led back to the time when he screwed up weeks before, and although he tried his best to patch it up with words of regrets and flowers, I hadn't inwardly resolved the hurt. I analyzed why I buried the hurt, and it all comes back to the same thing, lack of self-esteem. Lack of feeling worthy enough to express my true feelings for fear he will back away or think I am nagging or suffocating him. My gay ex-husband had me very conditioned not to ask for what he didn't want to give me. It always started a fight, and I always lost because he had better verbal damaging skills than I had. In fact, all these years later, he still knows how to trigger those buried feelings of inadequacy whenever we have an argument. He can shout me down and shut me up because I don't like fighting on such a low level. I find it degrading. My soulmate is not my ex-husband. He is kind and gentle, caring and giving. If I am upset about something, he takes it to heart. He has worked hard to change so he can meet my emotional needs. And 98% of the time, he does. It's the 2% of the time that always gets to me. And most times I let it slide because no one is perfect. I know he has tried so hard to make me feel good about myself and about us. But this one time was something of great importance to me, and the usual I'm sorry just didn't cut it. Once I recognized where the problem stemmed from, I sat down with him and said we need to talk about it because I finally understood what the problem was. And guess what? He didn't laugh at me or blow me off. He wasn't annoyed or angry. He listened and accepted my feelings, acknowledging that the hurt was deeper than we both realized. All was well again after that conversation. It was like a dark cloud being chased away and replaced by a lovely day. It taught me a lesson, which is why I'm sharing this with you. Through the years that our feelings are ignored or scowled at, we become conditioned not to ask because we would not receive. This behavior is easy to carry into our new relationships because we are still trying hard to please our new partners, subconsciously feeling that we failed with our gay ones. Every time we can't express our feelings, fearing rejection, we are giving in to the horrors of our past marriages. Not being able to assert yourself in a relationship only continues to build on your feelings of inadequacy, even when you are sure that they are dead and buried. It doesn't take much to retrieve them, no matter how much you think you've left them behind. Unless you intentionally believe that you are deserving of more, unless you internally believe that you are deserving of more, you will always settle for less. That is why I tell women who are leaving marriages with their gay husbands to wait before they jump into a new relationship with a man. You need time to relearn who you are and to work with the issues that can haunt you forever if you don't face them. Coming out of relationships where there is a lack of trust, intimacy, self and sexual esteem, and communication takes time. Hi, this is Bonnie Kay, who was just disconnected, and also Misty Hall, who was also disconnected. I'm going to get Misty back on here for one moment, and we apologize, but, you know, a lot of times on the radio show, we just never know what's going to happen. Hi, Misty, are you back there?
I'm back. We get all kinds of surprises.
I know. I was cut off. Maybe they didn't like what I was reading.
Well, I was really enjoying it, so I miss it, so please do.
I will continue reading that.
Please do, dear.
If you don't give yourself time to repair, chances are you will jump to the wrong relationship or take a potentially good relationship and destroy it all on your own. I have seen women who have met good men but destroyed the relationship because they haven't resolved their own issues with their gay husbands. They transform them into their new relationships and disaster occurs. We allow our feelings of inadequacy and mistrust to surface any time there is a problem rather than allowing ourselves to rationally work it out. That's why we all need time and breathing space after our marriages to regroup and regenerate. Now, this is not to say that you have to stay home and become a hermit like I did for many years. You can go out and have fun and practice for your soulmate. But before you get into the relationship mode, make sure you work out kinks from your marriage. If you don't, you are setting yourself up for a big fall. You may choose the wrong partner because you still haven't restored your own sense of self-esteem. And one thing I've learned, no one can make you feel better about yourself except you. Only then can you find long-term happiness and fulfillment. The most important thing to work on is overcoming your fear of asking for something that's important to you for fear of being rejected. We've tiptoed around our gay husbands not feeling worthy because they could never love us the way we needed to be loved. In a new relationship, stand up for yourself and don't be afraid for what you want. That's how communication and healthy relationships work. Don't allow your insecurities of the past to overtake your happiness in the future. And that was it. And I feel that's still so true.
I think it's absolutely true today, and I think it's absolutely true for straight wives. And I think it's a beautiful explanation you gave in regards to your soulmate you have with you today, how that it does, you know, when things come up, we do have those little triggers sometimes of the past, especially when we were married to a gay ex-husband. So, you know, that does bring up stuff in us, and I think communication is one of the things that really we have to be mindful of when starting a new relationship. Because
I think women are afraid to communicate because of that fear of rejection.
Exactly, and that's what I was getting ready to say. When you're with someone that you really should be with, they will want to know how you feel. They will want to know what your opinion is. And it's your job to show up for yourself and truly be who you are.
Well, I agree with that. And I still feel like any other kind of recovery, although I know some people may not agree at the moment, but I know that when you go through any kind of addiction and you have to go through recovery, whether it's, you know, drug addiction, alcoholism, codependency, any kind of recovery, and even though this is certainly not in the same ballpark, but it is a recovery process, you know, that it's just common sense, or I think the policies of these agencies that tell you for the first year, don't get involved in relationships because you need to straighten out your own self first, and you have to first, you know, be strong going into a relationship so that you don't end up where you started. And I, you know, in the beginning I used to think, well, that doesn't make much sense. When somebody's in recovery, don't they need support? Wouldn't it be better if they found somebody to help them along the way? But I came to learn the hard way, of course, that that's not the case. That when you're going through that first year, you have to first really unravel so many things that are going on in your mind and things that are still mixed up and still confused. And you're still really vulnerable. And as I tell our women all the time, Misty, as you know, there are a lot of predators out there, and they don't have to be gay predators. There's a lot of straight predators that are looking for women who are very vulnerable and women who can, you know, give in and submit to them and do what they want to do. And if you don't, you know, build yourself up enough or regain your self-esteem, you're going to step right into those relationships. They're out there looking for you. You know, they can smell it. They can sense it. Yeah, you know, they can find that weakness in women. So what do you think about that?
I think it's so true, and I've seen that play over and over and over with women I've worked with, women I've, you know, that we've seen over the years and talked to. It's when you jump into something so quickly, sometimes it rarely have I ever seen it play out good, meaning that that was the true person for that person, because, just as you said, you're still going to be vulnerable. And I use the word fragile sometimes. You know, when you're broken into a million pieces from the discovery, going through the divorce process, and stepping back out into the dating world, when you put yourself back together, realize you're fragile. You have to be patient with yourself. You know, it's like riding a bicycle. You're on training wheels again. So you have to take time. And you want to make sure that you stand up for who you are in this world. Who is your authentic self, and, you know, that you don't settle for less. And when, and a lot of the women, this is the key thing that I find more and more with straight wives, once they, you know, get their divorce and starting to date again, starting to the straight relationship arena, some of them that find themselves in trouble in a relationship is when oftentimes I see this pattern over and over where they trust themselves less than they trust the partner they're with. I think that's a huge red flag in a relationship. When you find yourself trusting yourself less than what you, you know, than your partner telling you this or what's best for you or what's best for you as a couple, you know, really stand back from that and take pause. If you find yourself keeping things from your friends, sharing new things, you know, about a relationship with your friend, I think that needs to be a red flag. So there's lots of things when you step out in there to do with communication, communication with the partner and with friends. You know, how are you communicating that? I mean, it's so important in a relationship. I mean, it's just one of the main keys.
And I don't think that when you first go out there again, you have to really look at it as you're feeling your way through the water there and not just jump. You know, I was telling somebody else tonight in our chat, in our support chat room that, you know, sometimes it's a starter relationship, you know, when you first start meeting someone. And even though it feels so good to be wanted again by a man, it doesn't mean it's going to be the right relationship for you. And we see that a lot. But I think these starter relationships are really important, or restarter relationships, as I like to call them, because of the fact that, you know, a woman can start to feel that she is desirable, that there is something about her that's, you know, wanted by a man. And just even to have great sex, you know, after having none for so long or ever for many women, you know, really makes a big difference. And in fact, I just wanted to read another little thing. This was also from around the same time that I wrote this. It was called Feeling Like a Whole Woman Again. And it says, sometimes someone says something to me and it has a hard impact. My friend Connie from my online support group, who recently wrote in one of the newsletters how much better her life is since she divorced and moved on, mentioned a thought to me. She said, in reference to her new relationship with a man, it's wonderful feeling like a whole woman again. These words hit hard. Those words hit true. Think about it. When you are living with a gay man, there is a void in your life, namely sexuality. No matter how we slice it or dice it, sexuality is a strong part of our identification as a woman. When a man rejects you sexually, that pulls away all the layers of your sexual esteem that was born within you. We learn to suppress these feelings, pushing them under on some level, so that we can develop a feeling of numbness so that we don't hurt in that area. It's easier to be numb than to hurt. Nothing is more hurtful than having the man who claims to love you sexually reject you. And I don't mean sexual rejection on an occasional basis. I mean sexual rejection forever and ever. And the longer you stay in your marriage, the more you lose yourself of yourself as a woman. There are those gay husbands who will throw their wives a bone every now and then just to make them happy. Well, thanks, pal. Or shall I say, no thanks, pal. No woman needs to feel as if her husband is doing her a favor when he wants to cement the relationship in the most natural way known, namely making love. And somehow, when a man makes you feel as if he's doing you a favor, I can promise you that the enjoyment is quickly depleted. No woman likes to be a sexual charity case. So, if you are still in your marriage with your gay husband and feeling like less than a woman or an incomplete woman, no, this is perfectly normal in these abnormal situations. Once you move past the marriage and begin your life again, you will be amazed at how much of yourself you will regain. What do you think of those thoughts?
Wow, absolutely. I mean, these types of relationships, what some people I don't think understand is that it completely wears down and erodes the feminine spirit of who you are, who you're meant to be, and that's part of your wholeness, you know, your mind, body, and spirit. Your sexuality is part of that as well. And when that is completely denied, and like the letter said, a charity case, meaning, you know, just give in and give the charity sex, I mean, that's terrible. That doesn't help a woman feel good about herself. That doesn't help anyone feel good about themselves in a relationship. And it just creates so many issues surrounding who you are, you know, am I good enough? There must be something wrong with me. And that's when so many of the issues start internalizing. And that's not good when you start, you know, when the gay husband's issues of not having sex with the wife, then the wife thinks, oh, this must be my fault. Because many of the wives are told in many different ways that it is their fault or led to believe because they live in a sexless relationship. And it's unhealthy. That's very unhealthy for both sides.
Well, I think that, once again, this all ties into relationships and being ready to have a relationship again. You know, I don't mean to get too personal with you, Misty, but I know that your life is pretty much an open book, too, most of the time. And did it take you a long time to get ready to meet someone again?
Oh, absolutely. I had so many things to overcome before I met someone. And for some of the women out there, that when they hear my number, they may scream, you know, especially if you're just starting into it. But once I started the divorce, it took me about 3.5 years, up to 4 years, to start a relationship, to even look for someone, just because I had a lot of wounds to heal. I had a lot of wounds to heal in terms of being married to someone gay. And on top of him being gay, it was a very abusive, physical and emotional abusive relationship that took a long time to heal as well. So there was a lot of trust issues there I had to work through and realize and start trusting myself again. And I knew enough to know that I had to work on myself first. And at that time, when I divorced, I decided I didn't want to be with anyone. I was just going to be alone. I was going to be happy alone. Well, you know, that usually does change, I have to say. That changed. But during those, you know, most of the recovery process, I will have to say, took place the first year. Almost all of it did. But I was still closed to the idea of dating. I was not open to that whatsoever at the end of year one. End of year two, I mean, it was, I could have started dating, but I wasn't ready personally. There was a lot of things going on in my life. I was onto this road of so many good things happening that I didn't want to pull a relationship into it, to be quite honest, once I had done a lot of the healing and recovery. But it takes time. It takes time. And, you know, I just think that's the way it was meant to be, because there was so much damage done. There was so much destruction that there was a lot of healing that needed to take place. And it happened when it happened. I mean, it was at least three and a half to 4 years before I started even thinking about dating again.
And I think women think about it at different points. I know women who ran out immediately. Like when I ran a support group here in Philadelphia, I had a young lady who, you know, used to meet with couples, actually. When I first started having my live support groups, I used to act very much like the Straight Spouse Network when I first started out 30 years ago. Or 28 years ago, and I used to, you know, work with people in all different situations, no matter how bizarre I thought they were. You know, they were husbands and wives, or husbands, wives, and boyfriends and girlfriends, whatever the situation was. It was quite a learning experience for me, because I was relatively new to this, you know, especially working with people in this situation. And I was just in college and getting my degrees, and it kind of all mixed in together. So it was a good experience, you know, until I realized that, you know, this is not the way I want to, you know, hit this problem, that I don't think, I just took my stand that this is not a healthy situation and that I really can't support marriages that want to stay together. But that was after a couple of years of having weekly meetings at my house with all different kinds of marriage situations. But I had one young lady who came to me with her husband, and they were, you know, just in the process. He was coming out, and, you know, they hadn't decided what they wanted to do yet. You know, they thought maybe they could live together and make it work, and, you know, how people try to compromise everything. But finally, they decided they're going to split up, and within about 2 weeks, you know, she was out dating somebody, and she said, I need this, you know, I want somebody to make me feel like I'm a woman. And, you know, she started dating a number of people, like, very quickly, and, of course, never found fulfillment. Because she hadn't even dealt with her own issues yet. She was married for like 17 years and hadn't had time to really unravel what she was doing. So she was just jumping around like a bed fly. And, you know, I explained to her, I said, her name was Linda. And I said, Linda, you don't understand that, you know, it's great to go out, experience something, but realize said, it's not going to be a long-lasting relationship at this point. You haven't even dealt with your whole situation yet. But she just needed to feel good about herself. And so some women, and I mean, really worked with a lot of women in this situation who felt that need that when their marriage is over, or even before their marriage is over, they have to feel wanted, desirable, walk away from that sexual rejection. So they'll go out there and just develop, liaisons, very frequently. But I feel that those kind of relationships really hurt you in the long run. I mean, if you keep jumping like that, I mean, there's a time and a place, and you have to move at a certain moderation, but just to keep jumping from bed to bed, after a while you start feeling used in a different way. So I think, once again, getting back to the healing process, waiting, I think, a year is a really reasonable amount of time to wait and, pull yourself together in your thinking. But we have our caller now, so let's see if this is Aggie. Hold on 1 minute. Get her on the phone. Hello?
Hi, this is
Bonnie
and
Misty.
Hi, this is Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. We were waiting for you.
I got tied up to another phone call.
We told everybody when we got on that one of our favorite callers, Maggie, will be calling in tonight.
Here I am.
Well, thank you for joining us. Misty, Maggie's on the phone with us.
Hi, Maggie. It's so good to talk to you. How are you this Halloween Eve? Or Halloween Day, not Halloween.
This is Halloween night.
Yeah.
I'm a day behind.
No trick-or-treaters. I live in an apartment complex, and even though there are a lot of kids that live here, they don't trick-or-treat in the apartments. And I kind of miss that. I enjoyed watching the kids, in their costumes and everything. But I've been listening to the discussion about women who rush right out and into another relationship, and for the last year, I have been involved with a divorce and grief recovery group that approaches where we work with women who are separated, divorced, or widowed, and approach it from a grief recovery standpoint, because regardless of whether you have divorced your husband or your husband has died, or in the case of a man, the wife has been divorced or died, it's still a loss. And it's a loss on a number of different levels. And until you deal with that loss and work through all the stages of grief, you're not a whole person. And, I personally think that if you're going to go into another relationship, you need to be whole before you do it.
Well, let me ask you this question. Since you've been involved now with divorce and grief, I mean, I feel this way, so let me hear your take on it. I say that it's hard to end any marriage, even a bad marriage. Even if, the marriage is not a good marriage to be in, it's still hard to end it. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And especially, the longer you've been married, the harder it is. I've been married 37 years and had been married 36 years when I found out that my husband was gay. And told him that I wanted a divorce. And so, I married for life.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lifestyle for me. And so it was one of the most difficult things I've ever, if maybe not the most difficult thing I've ever had to do, was to tell him, I know what you're doing. I know that you've been having affairs for the last several years, and I want a divorce. And it's been a very rough road for me, but I felt it was the only choice I had. I could not stay in a marriage to a man, number one, who was gay and obviously didn't want me, and two, a man who had cheated and run around on me for, Lord knows how many years, and shown me just what I considered to be the ultimate disrespect.
Well, let me ask you this, because you do come from a religious background, right?
Not uber religious, but yeah.
But you belong to a church.
Right,
you belong,
right. And my husband was a preacher's son.
Okay, so he came from a religious background.
He got a much more religious background than me.
Right, but he still got married in a church. He took vows, and,
right,
you know, in front
right,
of God.
Took vows in the church.
Right. So at any point, did this become an issue for you on the religious end?
Not
really. Because I know a lot of women of ours really struggle on that Christian end about, you know, well, I made a vow to God for better, for worse, for this and for that. Like, how would you address that?
Well, yes, I did. I did make vows for, you know, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, and we went through bad times and we went through good times and all of that. You also take a vow to forsake all others. And there is biblical justification for divorce on the grounds of adultery.
Mm-hmm.
So I never once, I've never had any religious guilt over my decision. And I have been very fortunate in that I have been supported by my pastor and also by a very close family friend who is a Catholic priest. And both of them have told me, you know, you are the injured party. You didn't do anything wrong. So you are, you know, you're justified in asking for a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of women do struggle with it because, you know, I guess they don't, you know, maybe in some of the more fundamental religions. I know my husband did come from a very fundamentalist background. I came from a little more liberal religious background. And you know, I can't see how a church could try to make someone feel guilty for staying in a marriage that was a complete and total lie.
I know, but what about these churches that tell you that gay is a choice and these guys can change and you should be there supporting them through this? Because we got women who write us to that effect a lot.
I won't say the real word I'm thinking, but I will say hogwash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, medical, more and more medical evidence supports that homosexuality is not a choice. It's the way you're born, just like you're born.
Right, and they'll
alive.
Even admit to, they'll admit to that, Maggie, but what they say is that even if it's not a choice, even if you're born that way, you still, a person still has the power to control it and to make the decision. Like, let's take Ted Haggard, for example. You know,
yeah.
This man who was having all kinds of gay relationships, who's this big-time minister, you know, now has announced that he was, well, he doesn't consider himself gay. He said he was straight with gay issues. But
yeah, sexually
confused. Yeah, exactly. But now he said that he's fixed and that, you know, he doesn't have to act on those gay feelings ever again. And so when women are told this by the church that your husbands can be fixed, but, you know, you have to really stick by them and give them that support, what do you say?
Again, hogwash. I can't buy into that, you know. I'm sorry, and I don't know how you go about convincing a woman, you know, that what she's being told is to stay in a destructive relationship that's going to end up destroying her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish I had an answer because Lord knows if I did, I could probably sell it and become a millionaire.
No, I mean, I agree. I just don't, you know, I can't speak from a religious point of view because I'm Jewish. So
yeah.
When Christian women come to me, you know, I feel really, you know, I tell them from a humanistic point of view, but when they try to argue the religious point with me.
And that goes back to the issue of the Bible. I mean, I have read some stuff online. Nowhere in the New Testament does Jesus say anything about same-sex behavior. Nowhere. But he does talk about love, about how we should love one another, how we should love our neighbor. You know, but he doesn't talk about sex. I mean, about, you know, gay sex. And then people point to the book of Leviticus in the Old Testament,
mm-hmm.
which was rules. but it was a book of rules written 3,000 years ago to address a specific time and a specific culture that doesn't exist today. But people pull out passages of scripture out of context. I mean, the book of Leviticus talks about, you know, a man shall not lie with another man. It also talks about tattoos and how you shouldn't have tattoos and how you shouldn't wear clothing that's made of two different types of materials, and how you shouldn't eat shellfish and how you shouldn't touch the skin of a pig. But these people who are railing against homosexuals eat shrimp and go to football games.
Uh-huh.
So they're violating, you know, these rules in Leviticus too. But for some reason, those rules don't seem to match account. It's only the ones about, you know, homosexuality. You can take the Bible and you can prove anything with it. The Bible can you justify slavery, apartheid, anti-Semitism. To oppose interracial marriage. It's been used to support the Ku Klux Klan. I'm not saying I'm against the Bible. I think the Bible is a wonderful piece of literature.
No, you're just against
the way
people misinterpret it, right?
I believe it's been grossly misinterpreted. I tend to view it in a more metaphorical sense, you know, that these, you know, and as opposed to a more, you know, literal sense.
Well, I think you have to take really the spirit of the Bible instead of the, you know, it's the way people interpret it and misinterpret it, shall I say. And if you really look into the spirit of the Bible, like you say, even though I'm not a Christian, I certainly have read the Christian, you know, Bible, and also being related distantly to Jesus from the same family line, feeling that close affinity to him as a family member. But the thing is that with Jesus, you know, the spirit of the whole thing was the message of love, not of damnation and punishment and hatred. And where it's gotten so twisted up through the years is just beyond me, because this is never what it was meant to be. But it has.
Right, you know.
And that's the reality.
I remember reading on one website, it said, you know, the Bible is a book about God and Jesus. It's not a sex manual. And that's true. You know, the Bible is a book about God and Jesus. You know, it's not wasn't designed to to address sexual issues. And you know, and if you are a Christian, you know, me personally, I think you should be focusing on what you said. You know, Jesus preaching about love. And somewhere recently I read where, you know, it talked about how many times Jesus talked about love. And it was, I mean, in the hundreds of times that he mentioned love.
Absolutely.
But not one time does he ever say anything about same-sex relationships.
I've never heard him mention that at all.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we need to focus on what he does say and not what he doesn't.
And then, you know, I find always there is that kind of hypocrisy where, you know, I have fundamentalists tell me about, like you were mentioning in Leviticus, about two men living together, you know, laying together. But then on the other hand, they'll say that they don't acknowledge the Old Testament because after Jesus came, then, you know, that kind of negated it. So then why are you looking back to it?
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, the Christianity is based on the New Testament. So, yeah,
exactly.
So why are they looking back to Leviticus, you know?
Right, that's what I never quite understand. Like, you can't have it both ways, just to satisfy yourself.
In my own situation, I believe that, you know, this very fundamentalist, literal interpretation of the Bible, you know, and the teachings that, you know, homosexuality is a sin, is you know, what led my husband to suppress it for those many, many years and to get married, because, you know, I made him socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he married, then nobody was going to suspect that he was gay.
Do you think when he married you, he was hoping he wouldn't be gay?
I think, yeah. I mean, back then they used to tell gay men, you know, well, if you'll get married, you know, that'll solve the whole problem. And
mm-hmm.
I that's what he was hoping, is that it would solve the problem. And
did he ever admit to you that he had those feelings before he married you?
I'm trying to remember what his exact words were. I think it was something like, I've struggled with this all my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know for sure, you know, how much he acted on it or if
no,
he
but he did struggle with it, so that meant that he must have had the feelings for it.
I think, you know, at least, you know, probably puberty, you know, he struggled with it. And then, of course,
yeah.
you know, living in, you know, in the household with a father who's, you know, a very fundamentalist Christian preacher. Quite honestly, I can't imagine anything closer to hell on earth than being in that situation. And in
mm-hmm.
that respect, I feel very sorry for my husband, because he was dropped into, I mean, there was no way he could win.
Mm-hmm.
There was just no way he could win, you know. If he either hid it and suppressed it and, you know, ended up as screwed up as he is today, or he admitted it and got kicked out by his family.
Mm-hmm. Now, does his family have any idea at this point in time?
Not a clue. He has somehow managed to convince them that I'm the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has admitted to his family that he had an affair, but he just let them believe that it was with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he has also, I feel pretty certain he's led them to believe that I've wanted a divorce for a long, long time, but
mm-hmm.
I just stuck around until we had been married long enough that I could get lifetime alimony. And so now they look at me as the bad guy. They sort of look at me as a gold digger. You
exactly.
know, and wonder why I didn't go to marriage counseling and try to save our marriage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When if they the truth, you know, they would turn their backs on him in a heartbeat, which is sad. I mean,
it is. It makes them live this worst lie their whole lives, because, you know, I don't think people realize how serious it is for a lot of men who really feel so ingrained to their families and have been told from the time that they're little or born that, you know, homosexuality is evil, it's deviant, it's perverted, and anyone who would practice that is deviant, you know, is perverted. And if it ever happened in our family, we would never talk to that person again. Well, when they hear that message going on for years, what are they supposed to feel?
Right, and my husband has had that situation in his family. His brother has a gay son who has been completely shunned by the family. And so
mm-hmm.
he's seen firsthand exactly how his family is going to behave, you know, about someone.
And how did they behave when they? How did his family react to that?
To the gay nephew.
Mm-hmm.
For all practical purposes, he's dead to them.
Wow.
His own father won't even allow him to set foot in his house.
Wow, that is really unbelievable in this day and age, right?
No, it is. It is so sad, you know. And, I mean, and this, you know, this nephew, I would say young man, he's not a young man, he's like 35 years old. Well, that's young, but, I mean, he's a productive citizen. He has a good job. He's been in a committed, monogamous, same-sex relationship for probably 10 or 12 years. And my husband's brother has another son who has been a drug addict for the last 10 years of his life. He's in his mid-20s,
mm-hmm.
and they support him. They enable him. They let him live with them in their house. They bailed him out of jail. They paid for him to go to rehab several times, you know. And so this child who is just totally, you know, contemptuous of the law, and completely takes advantage of him, you know, they accept him. But the one who's gay and a law-abiding citizen, they've turned their backs on them. So, I mean, it sends a horrible message. Horrible message.
And that's why, I guess, for so many years that, you know, your husband suppressed himself.
Right,
because
he knew,
and I guess
and
that's
he,
why
I
don't ever tell anybody in his family, right?
Right. I mean, and he even told one of our children that he was scared to death that his siblings would find out.
Are his parents still alive?
His mother is, but his mother has Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if he told her, she would forget it in 10 minutes. So,
well, does he think that his siblings would reject him if they found out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I know they would. I mean, if his brother is willing to you know, to turn his
give
back
up
on
his
own
son,
child.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. He would turn his back on his brother as well.
And I just find that today, like I say, we're living in the year 2010, almost 11. And I not only find that sad, I just find it so inconceivable that someone could be so prejudiced towards homosexuality that if it's your brother, son, sister, daughter, whatever the case is, that you're willing to cut them out of your life like they're not there or don't exist.
Right.
I mean, don't you find that hard to believe?
Oh, absolutely. It's barbaric.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely barbaric. It's cruel, you know. And I don't know what the answer is. You know, like,
I mean,
I
know there's a lot of faiths that do that, though. I mean, it's not just Christianity.
Oh,
well, Muslims are no different. Asian people and their culture have, you know, the same problem. You know, I have a lot of people who write to me from Asian countries, you know, whether it's the Philippines or whether it's China, you know, or Japan, from Korea. I have, you know, men writing to me from all over. And I feel so bad because they say that, you know, I'm forced to live by my society, you know, as a straight married man, and I feel bad for my wife, but what can I do? And when you're in a society that some of them will kill you for being gay.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll just, you know, excommunicate.
Well, I mean, it happens here, and then we've had this recent spate of you know, these kids being bullied and committing suicide, which is just horrible. You know, children as young as you know, 10, 11, and 12 years old are killing themselves because they're being bullied so badly about being gay.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when we keep talking, when people say to me, in this day and age, you know, what do you mean people can't be gay? You know, there's some, you know, gay is so accepted, you know, there's gay everywhere you look. But a couple of weeks ago, Misty and I brought up this article that happened in New York City, where these two gay men were attacked by a Latino group of, you know, anti-gay Latinos. And they beat them so badly and raped them with a baseball bat. And, you know, they were nearly dead. And that's in New York City in today, 2010, you know. So if this could happen there, why do people think that it's so well accepted? Exactly. And Misty, you're from Kentucky. How would that be in that part of the world?
Wow. I've heard many people say that they don't think gay people live there. I mean, I have been guilty of being one of those persons before I married my gay husband. You know, I'm from the hills of eastern Kentucky. They live very secretly, very secretly. I'm not aware. I'm not saying it doesn't exist because I don't live there anymore in eastern Kentucky. But I'm not aware of any crimes such as we've been hearing about lately. Thank God, you know, where people, and I do hate that people have to hide who they are. That's not fair either. But I do think where I'm from, at least people are smart enough and to not hurt, kill, or injure other people because of who they are. I mean, would they excommunicate them from the family because of religious reasons? Absolutely, yes. Like some of the things Maggie was just talking about. So, you know, there's lots of things that people will get rid of the family for. But in terms of most of it's religion reasons. They would, like, kick them out of the church, which I think is terrible. They would, you know, the families wouldn't speak to anyone anymore. And I think that's terrible. When I was going through my own divorce, I did not, I didn't out my ex to anyone's family because I knew that if I did, that he would lose his whole family because of religious reasons. masks and things such as that. So there's that that goes on, but not like the bullying. I have never seen that. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, but I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I just think that there are so many different variable factors. It used to be, well, if you live in the city, you're safe. If you live in the suburbs, you know, you're taking a chance. I say you're still taking a chance anywhere you are. There are homophobic people all over the country in every city, state, town. You know, in some kind of, some is more subtle, some is not. And maybe it is more accepted, you know, by a bigger crowd in bigger cities. But that doesn't mean that everybody's accepting it.
Right, they're homophobes everywhere.
I think homophobia is everywhere, and I think this is the problem. And I'm really kind of surprised. You know, I'll tell you, a lot of women tell me that when their husbands come out, it's usually when a father dies. But, I'm sorry, did
mine
you say
the opposite. Mine was the opposite. Mine was the opposite. When my ex-husband's mother died, he started really, really living pretty dangerous and on the edge.
But his father was still alive?
Mm-hmm. But that goes back to the religious thing. His mother was much more into the fundamental religion than his father was. So that
mm-hmm.
could be the key of why that was.
Right, so maybe he was more afraid of her finding out than him.
Quite possibly.
And so I see that often happening. Women will write to me that all of a sudden, like, a father died, so now the husband's coming out, or, you know, a parent died, and why did they wait till this point in time? Well, you know, it's pretty obvious they waited because of, you know, that family pressure of being gay, and now they don't have to keep their secret anymore. But I'm just curious, with your husband, why he decided to, like, kind of ignore that. Well, you said his mother died, right?
Yes, his mother passed away, and that's when he really came out. He didn't come out to me. Let me rephrase that. He was still living in the closet with me, but that's
mm-hmm.
when I noticed so many changes in him that I absolutely knew something was going on. That
mm-hmm.
I could not ignore the changes anymore. I could not pretend that nothing else was going on or nothing else was happening. That's when I realized that I really had to dig a little bit deeper to see what was
and
happening.
Maggie, could you share some of those changes so that women can have their, you know, alerts, you know, set up? Maybe you can give some of those.
The changes that I saw in my husband, actually, until I discovered a series of emails
mm-hmm.
Between him and another man, I wasn't aware that anything was going on.
But
and
you said you saw some changes, right?
Well, I thought he was going through some midlife crisis. You know, he started going to the gym, he started working out, and I thought, well, you know, hey, he's 50, you know, he's more concerned about, you know, his health and that sort of thing. And but, you know, he was working.
Did you see a change in his appearance?
He was always very vain, so that didn't change at all. You know, the vanity was there from the get-go. He was working late a lot, or so he told me, but then he had also moved up within his company so that he was in a higher managerial position. And
mm-hmm.
so I just presumed that, you know, along with the better position and the higher pay came a little bit more responsibility and a little more overtime.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, other than, you know, until I saw the emails, I didn't have a clue that, you know, that the man was gay.
Right. But did you feel something was lacking in your marriage?
Not so much in the marriage, but definitely in the sexual aspect of our marriage. I always thought there was something wrong with me because for me, sex was never satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of something that I did because that's what you're supposed to do. You know,
right.
You're supposed to have sex with your husband.
That's your wifely duty to do it, right?
My wifely duty, that's right. And so 5 years ago when, you know, we stopped having sex because, you know, he claimed that he had erectile dysfunction and Viagra wasn't working for him, you know, I was tried to be very understanding about that, and I did not pressure him about sex. I didn't want to make him feel bad, you know, any worse than he already felt, you know, about not being able to perform. And I thought that, you know, he didn't initiate sex because he didn't want to try and fail again. But what I later found out was that, you know, he was getting the doctor to prescribe another one of the erectile dysfunction drugs for him, and he was performing just fine as long as the partner had a penis.
So now that all has been said and done, when you really do look back, though, besides the sex, there was nothing to tip you off?
There was nothing. No, I mean, because I mean, this has been going on now. It's been almost 2 years since
right.
I found those emails, and I mean, I have racked my brain, and they're just, you know, there was nothing that at the time it happened I would ever have tipped me off. You know, like I said, the working late. You know, like I said, he was in a high managerial position,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a high salary, and I thought that was just part of the job, you know. But, you know, when he was telling me he was working late, he was lying to me. You know, I trusted him like I expected him to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled out my car keys and said, I'm going to the grocery store. That's exactly where I was going. So when he called
mm-hmm.
and said, I have to work late, I trusted that was the truth. You know, he just had a little bit different attitude about truth than I did.
So now that it's pretty much over, you know, do you think that it will be hard for you if he wants to move on to another relationship?
Yeah.
You think there's
a lot of things that
you have to untangle?
I think I'm going to have some serious trust issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier before you came on,
yeah.
about the importance of being able to first pull your life together.
Yeah, and the first thing I have to do is to get me fixed and to get me in a good place.
Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm sure you discussed that at your divorce and grief counseling, right?
Right, and a lot of that is just, you know, recognizing, you know, our group is basically based around the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross model of the five stages of grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And we discuss different topics every week, you know, like, I could tell you until I until I have to stop and think about them.
Well, how about the anger part? Do you think
that's the part that I'm still struggling with right now,
mm-hmm.
is the anger. You know, as soon as it settles down, something else will come up and kind of, you know, flare it back up again. The fact that, you know, that my husband has fought me on the divorce and, you know, reneged on some things that we had agreed on, you know, has made me angry, and I think it's just something that's going to have to run its course.
I'll tell you what really makes me angry. I don't know if you've encountered this in your group, but, you know, I've talked about this a number of times, and I don't care if people like it or not, but it just makes me ill when I have to hear that our women are being sued for alimony. Nothing makes
yeah.
me more angry than a gay husband suing his wife for alimony.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you talk about anger. How do they not be angry when it comes to something like that?
Yeah.
How do you get past that when, you know, you have a husband who's been lying to you through your whole marriage, you know, who's taken away all these years of your life, and now he wants you to pay him alimony? I don't get that, do you?
Yeah, no, I don't get that either. You know, the lying should, you know, and that should just do away with any claim at all.
Men need to be financially responsible to their wives. You know, I can understand the whole gay thing, and I'm very sympathetic and understanding, and trust me, I really am. I understand.
Well, and me too. I mean, I have absolutely nothing against gay people. I mean, I go to church. I mean, the denomination that I belong to is very gay affirming. We have a very large gay and lesbian part of our congregation, and these people they're wonderful Christian people. They haven't married straight people and lied to them. You know,
yeah, but I even understand the ones who married them and lied to them. You know, I'm even sympathetic to what their cause was or their need to be straight or the fact that, you know, they didn't understand their sexuality.
But then to try to turn around and benefit from that, you know.
Well, not only benefit. I mean, now that they've taken away 20, 30 years of, you know, someone's life or more, then to expect to be paid in return, I mean, after all you've taken
away.
And
that's what I meant by benefit from it. Yeah, yeah.
Right,
Be paid for it, yeah. No. I don't buy that.
I think there's something really, really wrong with that thinking.
Yeah, it should be the other way around. They should have to pay for stealing the straight spouse's life.
Right. That's why I tell the gay men who come to me, be financially and emotionally responsible. You know, you talk about how can women heal. Well, they can help their wives heal. And you would think, and here's what always puzzles me, even though gay men always tell me the reasons for this, but, you know, it just really burns me up how so many gay men after a marriage, and, you know, these are gay men who married, not, you know, I'm not talking about gay men who don't marry, but so many gay men who marry, you know, they walk away from their families, they walk away from their wives, and they have nothing good to say about their wives. You know, they have nothing but, you know, bad things to say about them. And rather than just take the responsibility and saying, you know, I'm a gay man and that's why it didn't work out, you know, they'll blame everything else except themselves and justify their misactions of not giving, you know, support to the family financially or emotionally. And that's the part I'll never get.
Yeah, it's just a, you know, it's a lack of accountability and a lack of responsibility. And I think some of it goes to probably, I think a lot of them suffer from some sort of narcissistic, Misty probably, or both of you probably.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Misty, are you familiar with narcissistic
personality disorder, you know?
Are you familiar with that,
Misty? And it basically boils down to it's all about me, you know.
Yes, I am familiar with that. And it's,
can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that it's... narcissistic personality is something that can even be diagnosed if you want to do that. Go to a psychotherapist or a therapist if you have all the characteristics. And unfortunately, I think many of the gay men that marry straight wives have a lot of those characteristics, meaning it's all about them. It's everything's about them. It's, you know, it's the me syndrome, as I call it, you know. They are most important. It's their life. They're living in their world. It's really not any regard to other people. It's all about them, what happens to them, what's good for them. And it's not, it's just not a very compassionate situation to be in because that person lacks, you know, compassion, empathy, understanding to the other person, to their partner, because they're too busy living inside their own world. They don't see the path of destruction. Because it's all for them. And, you know, of course, not all ex-husbands are like that, but many of them carry so many of that trait. It's just really, it's so sad because, unfortunately, many of the straight wives I've worked with are very giving women. And that's not a good combination when you have a narcissistic husband and a wife that's very giving because she's just going to keep giving. He's going to keep taking. It's going to be more about him. And it's everything.
But Missy, here's what I want to know. With these narcissistic men and these narcissistic personalities, do they develop prior to the time of marriage?
You know, I think that's such a good question. I think I'm a firm believer that our personality traits are pretty much set early on. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that personality traits can get more concentrated as we age, or they can become more concentrated when you're in certain relationships. So,
because if I take a look at, like, sociopathic behavior, I don't necessarily believe that somebody starts off with that. I think the more you live a lie, you develop it. You know, so if you're living a lie on a day-to-day basis, in basis, you know, you can become more of a sociopath where you start believing your own lies and you start, you know, blaming everybody else for whatever the case is. But I'm not sure if you were like that prior to the time you started really living that lie. So I'm not sure about narcissism, if that becomes more extreme, you know.
I think it's a good point, what you're saying, because I think many of the gay men that marry straight wives, they have to live pretty compartmentalized, and I will even say somewhat shallow of a life, because they have to keep up this facade and not be true and authentically who they are. So they're living somewhat of a lie. So, you know, I think they may have a tendency early on for their type of personality, and their type of relationship may really bring it out and start it up more. I mean, I think that's a good point to absolutely consider. There's lots of things that play into these roles when it comes to these characteristics that, you know, we don't have a lot of scientific proof on, you know, but it's certainly, you know, talk to any straight wife, and many of them, many have husbands or ex-gay husbands that are very narcissistic, very self-absorbed.
Maggie, would you say yours was that way?
Yeah. You know, it's always been about him. And
but was it always, or did it become more prevalent later on?
It developed more and more through the years. And and now it's completely about him. I mean, his big thing now is, you know, well, if I have to pay you alimony for the rest of my life, when am I going to be able to retire? You know, and I'm sitting here thinking, he's, you know, he doesn't give a crap about me. You know, has he stopped to consider how am I going to, you know, am I going to ever be able to retire too? I spent, you know, our marriage supporting him. I was never able to develop a career. I might be able to go out and get a job, but I don't have a career. I don't have the earning capacity that he has. So, I'm at the age now where I could start drawing money out of my IRA. But if I draw out my money out of my IRA at age 59 and a half, what am I going to live on when I'm 79 and a half? But, you know, all he can see in his mind is I'm not going to be able to retire when I'm 65.
And he probably feels you're taking him for his money.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of these men have that attitude, and that's what I don't get.
You know, he has forgotten that I supported him through two failed business ventures, that I've, you know, traveled halfway around the world with him with his job. You know, I stayed home and cooked and cleaned and raised the kids and, you know, was the chauffeur and the nursemaid and the this and then that and then the other. And did it without much of a salary. You know, I got a small household allowance, you know, every 2 weeks. So I worked just as hard as he did. It was just a non-financial contribution to the family.
Let me ask you this, Maggie, because this question came up a couple days ago with some people about, did he control the money?
He did.
Did you feel that was a form of control?
I'm not sure. He had a background in auditing and accounting. He was more knowledgeable about that. You know,
maybe he was able to hide things that way from you?
I know. There was money that showed up, when we went to court that I had no idea was there. And I'm convinced there's even more, but I'd have to hire a forensic accountant to find it.
But maybe he was spending money on his own habits or whatever.
Absolutely. I was able to find old credit card receipts, you know, where he had spent money at the sex shop and
subscribed
to an online gay dating site. But the funny thing is, over the past, you know, when he started acting on the gay urges, or at least when I as far back as I know that he was doing it, his gift to me became more and more expensive. I mean, I got some very expensive jewelry. I got, you know, very expensive Christmas presents. We went on some very nice trips. And so, you know, I think a lot of that was an attempt to maybe assuage some of his own guilt over what he was doing and hiding from me, because I think he thought, well, as long as I keep her happy, you know, everything's going to be okay. She won't be suspicious about anything. And, you know, she'll just, you know, be there in her nice little house in the suburbs, you know, with her, you know, professionally decorated, you know, house and her nice car, and things will be hunky-dory.
Well, I think a lot of times men take over the, you know, bookkeeping in a family because of the control issue. And because, as you were saying, and so I think women who are listening to this, you know, if you're looking for signs, which, you know, I know you're always the best one to talk to about this, Maggie, about red flags that women could look for, do you think maybe one of them is that if your husband's really controlling all the money and you have no say in it or access to what he's doing, that could be a red flag?
That could be. I tell women now, you know, regardless of whether you think your marriage is in trouble for any reason, you know, you need to have some money of your own.
Uh-huh.
You need to build your own credit rating, because, I mean, that's what I'm trying to do now is build a credit rating in my own name. I mean, we had very good credit as a married couple, but my credit was all tied in with his. So, you know, I'm having to learn to, you know, pay my own bills and do my own taxes and all that kind of stuff. And I'm more of your liberal arts type than of a financial frame of mind. But, you know, it's learnable. You know, I've learned to do it. I tell you, I've handled my own finances for a year now, and, you know, I haven't bounced a single check. I haven't had a single bill be overdue. I've paid my taxes on time. Uncle Sam hasn't come after me. so
it's been a great learning experience, right?
It has been. It has been. I've made some mistakes. I've probably spent some money. Not probably. I have spent some money on some things I shouldn't have spent money on. I've made some frivolous purchases. But, you know, I've learned from that. You know, I think when you stop making mistakes, you stop growing.
Exactly.
Because the mistakes are where you learn. And you know, for all, you know, as scary a step as it was for me to tell him that I wanted a divorce and to move out of the house and move out on my own, I'm very proud of myself.
That's one of the real benefits as far as,
what,
you know,
I've accomplished over the last year.
Exactly. And when you look back and you see all the different things you did accomplish, it has to be a good feeling. Like you said, even little things that, you know, people take for granted, but balancing a checkbook, making out the bills, you know, making sure the taxes are paid. You know, these are all new experiences for a lot of women.
Yeah.
People may laugh at that and say, big deal, but it is a big deal if you haven't done it before.
Yeah, if you've never done it before, if you've never had to go deal with the utility company and get utilities set up in your own name, and you have to show proof of income to do it. You know, so I have to go and show my, you know, my divorce, you know, my alimony, you know, agreement, you know, that says, hey, you know, I get this amount of money every month, and that's my income. You know, I had to go, you know, look at apartments and figure out where I could afford to live. You know, it was not things that I had ever had to do before, but I did it.
Right, and I think
fact,
in some
yesterday,
ways that's a sense of satisfaction, right?
Yeah, yesterday I just, you know, renewed my lease. You know, my apartment lease was coming up due, and so I went and had a little talk with them in the office and decided, yeah, I'd stay here for another year.
That's great.
You know.
So do you feel that right now, you know, you've been away from your marriage for a while and you're in that recovery process, do you feel that you are moving ahead in a positive way?
Absolutely. You know, overall, It's a positive move ahead. I've moved. Like I said, I still have a great deal of anger. But I think, you know, a lot of that is kind of situational, and that's because, you know, he's still fighting me on the divorce, and I think once You know, once that is over with, you know, at least the anger, that part will go away. But yeah, overall, you know, I've made a great deal of progress. I don't cry myself to sleep at night, every night, you know, anymore. I still have some periods where I get, you know, a little sad, and I won't say that I'm depressed, but I do have periods of sadness, but they're fewer and further between now.
Exactly. I always tell women it's going to be two steps forward, one step back, another two or three forward. You know, there's just no way to go straight ahead. I mean, there's going to be days when you feel, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going through this. And I don't care if it's 3 months, 6 months, or a year, or 2 years later. You know, there are times when you just get so caught up in it because there are reminders. You know, you see pictures, you have, you know, remembrances. And
something that we were talking about at the divorce group this week was the fact that we have the holidays coming up.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst
holidays are particularly bad. We're talking about doing a special program one evening on coping with the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember last year, you know, I just wanted to be able to find a closet somewhere and crawl in it and wrap up in a blanket and shut the door and just, you know, wait until Christmas and New Year's were over. I did not want to have to deal with the holidays. This year, it's a little better. You know, I'm kind of looking forward to it in a way. I mean, it's going to be different. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do for the holidays. A couple of girlfriends and I are talking about maybe taking a trip and going out of town. You know.
And I do want to let people know that, Maggie, like I say, it's been really challenging, you know, a couple of years, but, you know, she's come so far over that time that, you know, when you first go through this, you think there's never going to be an end. I'm never going to be happy again. My life is shattered, but I can't do it. Right?
We tell women in the divorce group, you know, that, you know, it's tough now, but it does get better, you know, and I know they get tired of us, you know, repeating those words. It gets better. It's just something you kind of have to sort of take on faith a little bit. And, you know, if you work through, you know, dealing with these stages of grief, you know, you can get through it and you can come out on the other side as a whole person. You know, the loss is always going to be there. That's never going to go away. You know, I mean, whether it's a divorce situation or a death situation, whether it's, you know, your husband's straight or gay, you know, the loss is always be there. But, how you deal with it and how it affects your life on a daily basis, you know, you can control that. You know, you have a lot of choices about, how, you know, what you can do. So I strongly urge women to, you know, to seek professional help of some sort, you know, a private therapist, a divorce group, you know, something, you know, if you don't feel like, you know, you're coping well enough, you know, there's no shame in seeking help. I think it's, you know, it's a shame not to seek help because then you're just setting yourself up for, you know, for further problems.
Well, we're going to have to end our show. You really kept us going, Maggie. I thank you so much because you're always so insightful. You know, you just really amaze our listeners. So I really appreciate you very much calling in tonight and taking the time to discuss so many of these issues. And I'm going to be hoping that you come back and talk about soon again because, once again, people learn so much from you. And we just want to tell our listeners and remind you again that we will not be on the air next week. You can always go back and listen to our archive show. Next week we're having our get-together in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And so, therefore, we will be tied up that night. And, you know, once again, go back to our archives and listen to any of the shows you may have missed. And I just want to thank our guest, Maggie. Misty, do you have anything to say?
I just want to thank Maggie as well. Thanks for bringing so much insight, especially on the side of the Christianity side that can really hold up some of their straight wives and add a little bit more insult to injury. So thank you so much for making that clear for us, Maggie. And good night and love to all.
All right, Maggie, come back and visit us soon, please. That's
okay.
A little of our listener. We love you, and thank you so much for listening to us. If you need any help at all, write to me at bonk@aol.com. Have a wonderful week, Misty. I love you. And Maggie, I love you too. Thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Well, good night.
Talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.